Today is November 15th, 2017, and this is episode number 437 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, titleless. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. If you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note. Bang. 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 ACM at macobserver.com.
I just don't even know where to go with that.
But you knew it. As bad as that sound effect was, you knew what it meant.
I knew exactly what it meant. Yep.
Right. So, you know what we just did?
What did we just do besides really bad gun sound effects? And by we, I mean you.
And the lamest title I've ever come up with, or didn't come up with, the case may be.
And I was just letting that one slide because I didn't want to like validate you for just totally phoning that one in.
The phoning, I could telegraph that one in.
I'm thinking that actually would have taken more effort.
I am lame. Spelled out. Anyway, right. We created a Facebook group for the Apple Context Machine.
Oh, sweet.
That's yeah, so cool. We did. That is cool. It's at facebook.com/context machine.
facebook.com/groups/context machine.
Is it slash groups?
Uh-huh.
Oh, it is slash groups.
That's how the groups thing works. But I totally get why you were confused, because the group has existed for literally minutes.
Minutes, moments even.
The pixels aren't even dry on the screen yet. That's how new this is.
That's totally how new this is. So you guys can join us there. It's a public group. You can come in, say whatever you want to say. Talk about the things we're talking about, you know, suggest topics, call us idiots. I assume that'll be the number one use for this particular Facebook group.
I'm assuming it will either be people calling us out for
idiocy. Go ahead.
Or people wanting deep explanations for your transient titles.
Could be. Could be. At some point, someone will compile a list of every title I've done and then, you know, like find the like five or six I've probably repeated.
And then call you out on it. On the group.
And call me out on it. Yeah, on the group. Yeah, they could do that. Facebook.com/groups/context machine.
It's really clever. Oh my gosh, that's the same name as Twitter.
Oh my gosh, it is, isn't it?
Context machine on Twitter.
Yeah, that's pretty clever.
That's an amazing coincidence.
Amazing coincidence. An amazing coincidence. An amazing coincidence. Okay, now, also entirely coincidental.
Yes.
Canal has put out a report.
The likelihood of this coincidence boggles the mind.
Top men come up with these segues, let me tell you. Top men. So here's the deal. They said that Apple reclaimed the top spot. Do you remember, was it May of this year that Apple was tops in wearables for the first time?
Yeah, it was Huawei and then Apple. Am I remembering that correctly?
Last quarter. Well, in May, it was Apple's that was number one. Mm-hmm. And then Apple lost. So that would have been for the January, the March quarter. Mm-hmm. And then Apple, well, I think, was number two last quarter. And it might have. Well, I don't think it was Huawei. It was
Xiaomi.
It was going to be Fitbit or Xiaomi. Yeah.
It wasn't Fitbit because they got kicked in the pants by everyone else.
By everyone else, right. So, and this quarter, Canalis says that Apple reclaimed the top spot. Now, and we should just give a caveat right there, okay, because these numbers are based on their estimates. Apple doesn't say how many units it ships.
Right. So their estimates come from getting data from multiple sources. Some of it comes from supply chain, I believe. Some of it comes from resellers reporting their numbers. And I think some of it comes from people that participate in consumer programs where their purchases can be tracked.
Right. And I'm not sure if Canalys does that. Do you know that Canalys does that?
No, but these are the common ways to get at this type of information. But all these companies have their own secret sauce.
Yeah, and sometimes that secret sauce is to come up with, you know, to pull numbers from out of thin air, to be polite. And like, I mean, for instance, Canalys' report has 25% of the market going to others. Somehow I doubt that. I don't think that the no-name wearables are being bought. It could be wrong. Maybe they're being bought in China, maybe in India. But that doesn't really quite work for me. But nonetheless, mm-hmm. nonetheless, they put Apple as number one, Xiaomi with 23% of the market. Xiaomi number two at 21% of the market. Fitbit number three with 20% of the market. Mm-hmm. And then you drop all the way down to 6% with Huawei at number four and Samsung at number five. Well, sorry, excuse me, with 5% in the fifth place.
So that says a lot about Samsung's products from a consumer perspective.
Yeah, and I'm surprised they're even that high, to be honest. But and again, you know, some of these numbers, I wouldn't take these numbers to the bank, or these percentages. I wouldn't take them to the bank. But it is interesting. I mean, it's, you know, from the standpoint of like tracking the relative performance from quarter to quarter, there's probably some value in a report like this.
Sure. Yeah. And it is interesting to see that it's this kind of heated race between three players.
Well, it is. So, all right. So there's another note. There's this, like, they put Samsung at the top, like Google must now, otherwise, the market will see further consolidation as vendors such as Apple, Samsung, and Fitbit dominate with their watch software platforms. Mm-hmm. It's like, why are you including Samsung as one of the dominating companies? They're like a distant fifth at 5%.
Yeah, it's that's fascinating.
And so that quote was attributed to analyst Jason Lowe, and then another quote attributed to analyst Mojia. He or she said Apple and Samsung are increasing user stickiness and brand loyalty by adopting an ecosystem strategy. It's like, well, yeah, that's true for one of them.
Well, it may be true for Samsung as well, but not on the scale that Apple is seeing.
Samsung doesn't have an ecosystem, man. They have delusions of an ecosystem. They have delusions of software relevance. I've been going on about this for years, but Samsung doesn't have crap. Samsung is just another crappy old OEM. You take them away and Apple doesn't get all their if Samsung disappeared tomorrow, their sales would just go to other crappy companies. Like mm-hmm. they don't matter. They don't matter. They're a big nothing burger in terms of any kind of innovation, any kind of bringing anything to the market. They're just another OEM.
And yet it totally makes sense for them to just keep cranking out these products because they're making so many of the components that go into these devices themselves. So they
sure. No, listen, Samsung has a thriving business being a Me Too OEM company with delusions of relevance.
And in this market.
Yeah.
Well, in many markets actually, but yeah.
They're tops now. And a part
supplier.
And a part supplier, right. And they're tops now, but I don't think Samsung has any stickiness. I think if any other Android maker out there came up with a killer product that Samsung would see its sales of flagship devices evaporate.
So as crazy as this is going to sound, maybe it's a good thing that Samsung is persistent and stays in these markets, because if they didn't, then people that prefer Android would have even fewer products to choose from that have a modicum of quality.
Modicum.
Did you like that?
I did like it, but it's generous.
I'm a nice guy.
You are a nice guy. So anyway, so it's weird. To me, it's weird that Canalys twice were suggesting that Apple and Samsung are dominating this market, or Apple, Samsung, and Fitbit are dominating this market, when Samsung isn't dominating crap. That's just weird to me. Whatever. That's just weird. Instead, what I see when I look at these numbers, I see three companies battling it out for first place. Mm-hmm. Get Apple, Xiaomi, and Fitbit. And I don't think it's at all coincidental that those three companies have three different business models. Fitbit is fitness tracking, right? They do that well.
Yes, they do.
Right? Xiaomi is, we're going to make a crap ton of products, and
they're going for price points.
Yeah, different price points. A lot. They're throwing a lot of different wearable devices at the market. No one of them does all that well.
Right, and then they make it up in volume.
But they make it up in volume. Yeah, sure. And I mean, Xiaomi is an interesting company. I mean, Xiaomi sort of, in my opinion, Xiaomi does like what Samsung does, but better and faster. And with the exception of they steal, to my knowledge, they steal less intellectual property in the process.
All right. So there's that.
There's that. Right. And you've got Apple, the third leg of this stool. I don't know. Whatever. doing their whole widget model, ecosystem, excellent fitness tracking paired very closely with a smartwatch, mm-hmm. right? And no one else in the market is doing what Apple's doing with Apple Watch. And Then you see everybody else trying to do Android Wear, dragging way, 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 way behind in terms of units sold and market share. And my takeaway from this is not that Samsung is dominating the market. Again, it's just weird that they kept doing that, but it's not that. It's more like we have three competing business models for the wearables market that are all duking it out, and they're all claiming a roughly equal share of the market. Mm-hmm. That's interesting to me.
I find it very interesting too. And what I'm really curious to see is what happens with the three big names over the next 12 months, because Fitbit, they were at one point the dominant player by a long shot, and their percentage of that market has been dwindling for a while now. And, now they're number three. And
but it's a real close number three.
It's a real close number three.
Considering the estimate aspect of this report, these three companies are essentially all exactly tied for first.
Okay, I'll accept that. And yet, if we look at Fitbit's own trends from their earnings reports, for several quarters now, they're on a downward cycle.
Yeah, fair enough. So, fair enough. And to be, it's possible that they haven't seen the bottom yet. It's actually likely they haven't seen the bottom.
I think that's likely. Yes.
They're eventually going to be relegated to relegated to folks who want a dedicated device for their athletic tracking. That's what I think.
Or they may move into a different market with their products. Like maybe they'll work on making part of the platform that you see in equipment in fitness centers or something.
Sure. Yeah, that could be.
And actually, I could see where if it's done correctly, that could be a pretty lucrative market to be in.
Sure.
Still, it's interesting because they've been on this downward slide. Excuse me. And I'm curious if they're going to continue that. And if so, how low is that going to go?
Right.
But I expect Apple and Xiaomi to stay at the top of that pack.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do too. I don't know. Xiaomi, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, Xiaomi is also just another OEM. You know, they're
just another OEM that's doing it right. Meaning they're doing it in a way that allows them to take a significant market share.
Currently, yes.
Mm-hmm. So as long as they can keep doing that, then I think they'll stay at the top of the pack with Apple. And we'll see where Fitbit ends up. And Samsung they're not dominating. They will stay at the low end with
wearables.
With their wearable sales.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. So this is kind of how I expect the players in this field to map out over the next 12 months still.
Yeah. Yeah, over the next 12 months for sure. And I'm happy to see a three-way race for this too, instead of a two-way race. I think that, although it'll probably eventually shake out to a two-way race.
It could. I put that into Fitbit's court. They're the company that's going to determine if this is a two or three player race.
Sure.
Yeah. So if they do it right, it stays a three player race. But I'm not convinced they're going to.
Yeah, me neither. Me neither. I don't know. We will see. The reality is that Apple really has done well with Apple Watch,
and in a stunningly short period of time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and at the price point that Apple Watch comes in, concerns that I heard people voicing when the watch first came out, I think are not founded. The concern that I'm talking about is the one where people said, people are going to buy this watch and they're not going to upgrade for a long time because that's not what people do with watches. And what we're seeing is that you do get a significant number of people, it seems, that are upgrading to the new watch, and Apple is still getting new customers along the way too.
Yeah.
And I mean,
I don't think there's a significant percentage of Apple's Apple Watch customers who are, say, upgrading every year.
No, but there's a lot of people that went from the original Apple Watch to Series 2 or Series 3. So maybe this is more like a every other.
Yeah, I could see a two or three year cycle on this. It really depends on what they add. I mean, like the Apple Watch Series 3, the big huge thing is really the LTE. Mm-hmm. Capabilities. So can Apple Watch Series 4 do as much? I don't know. Be as significantly different.
I don't know. Look at the iPhone X. That's significantly different.
It's true.
And we know that Apple isn't. No, we assume that Apple isn't as focused on the finishing up the Spaceship Center, Apple Campus, as they were. So now they're more focused again on products.
Yeah, it's conceivable. And this is kind of a crazy idea. It's kind of crazy, but I want you to stay with me.
Well, okay, I'll stay with you.
It's conceivable that Apple Watch Series 4 will look different because Apple Park is done. Mostly done. It's done in terms of design.
You know,
it's conceivable.
It's conceivable. The, we haven't had a change to the watch design since it came out. And yes, I know different materials for the case, but if you
Ainsley, if you're going to rebuild the studio now, could you please be quiet about it?
You know, the problem that I see with our interns.
Yeah. What?
Well, the problem.
But you mean the fact that we have them?
Oh yeah. Okay. That just kind of sums it up right there. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the fact that it seems that they are completely unaware of what it is that we actually do.
I know, right? They're interns for a podcast.
And
once a week we record this podcast.
And that's when they decide that they have to remodel or clean the studio.
Yeah. Clean or, you know, eat or like leave the studio. I'm doing quote marks here. Right. Like, you know, whatever.
No, I get it. It's yeah. I'm just glad they're on your side of the glass today.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that. Anyway, so we do apologize for the noise that they're making, but apparently it's like, you know, this is like the only time it could be done or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's kids these days. What are you gonna do?
What are you gonna do? What are you gonna do with a kid who's got, his name is Ainsley and there's three E's in it? What are you gonna do with that?
Have to millennials make your business cards.
For the millennials. Yeah. So anyway. Anyway, next topic. Next topic is, what is our next topic? Did you see this thing I put up this morning? This Harry Potter Wizards Unite?
Yeah, that's looks kind of interesting. Like the whole augmented reality thing, like we got with Pokemon Go.
Yeah.
But with Harry Potter.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's being done by, how do you pronounce it? Is it Niantic? Niantic? Niantic?
No, we're not going to pronounce it that way. Let's go with Niantic.
Okay. Those guys, the same folks that did Pokemon Go, right? They're developing a game with WB Games, which would be Warner Brothers Games. And because, you know, they've got the rights to this and they're doing an augmented reality game slash. I don't know if really if it's going to be a game or if it's going to be more of a world where you have wizarding stuff that's revealed in augmented reality. I'm okay. So excited by this.
That sounds kind of cool.
It sounds freaking awesome. Now, first of all, I personally didn't play Pokemon. I know that there were lots of Pokemon fans out there, and bless you, more power to you. That wasn't my cup of tea, but I'm a huge Harry Potter nut, and I think that in that you have this entire hidden world where it, you know, it's in the canon that the world is hidden. And the idea of being able to reveal that on occasion through augmented reality is just super exciting to me, man.
I think it sounds really cool too. And I say that having been someone that was so into Pokemon Go for a while and I just had so much fun with it.
Sure. Lots of people did.
Yeah.
For 2 weeks.
I know. There's still a lot of people having crazy fun with that. I got out of it because Niantic broke the game over and over. And the fun part of the playability for me was gone because I didn't have time to just randomly wander streets hoping to find a Pokemon character.
Sure.
So I got out of it. Apparently they fixed that a while ago, but too late. They lost me. So I hope they don't do the same sort of thing with the Harry Potter game, but still the idea of getting to be part of the secret hidden world of Harry Potter and experience the things that the muggles don't get to see and do it right through your phone. That sounds really compelling.
Have you been to Universal Studios, the theme park?
No. Well, no, I have not. I had a process in my brain. No. Wait, that's not true. That's the one where they have the ride where you get to see the Cylon shoot at you and go through the time tunnel from the $6 million man.
Is that Universal? That sounds like Universal, but if so, that's the Florida one.
No, it'd be the California one if I went to one.
Oh. Well, the $6 million man one isn't there anymore. And there is I didn't fly in a TIE fighter. Yeah, I guess we did fly in a TIE fighter. It's because it was stolen. Anyway, the Star Wars ride is still there, and that's actually in Disney.
That's in Disney.
Yeah. So anyway, the Harry Potter world, it's a Hogsmeade here in California. I know they're doing something different in Florida, but in California, they built Hogsmeade, and and it's all based around a ride, which is actually set in Hogwarts. And it's an amazing, amazing ride. Hands down, my favorite ride. I did Disney California Adventures and Universal. I did those foolishly back to back.
Sweet.
Over 3 days. And of all the rides that I did, the Harry Potter one was absolutely hands down my favorite. Now, another really cool thing that they did, and this was so great for the kids, is you could buy a wand. You actually go through Ollivander's wand shop.
Okay.
And they do this thing where a fellow who's in, you know, is an actor who is in wizard garb, goes through the process of selecting a wand, the right wand, of course, for one of the participants. And, you know, and they, of course, they pick out one of the little kids that's in the room. And it's, you know, it's a closed event. So there'll be like, you know, like 40 of you. 30 of you, something like that, inside a reproduction of Ollivander's wand shop.
Okay. Okay.
And, you know, it goes through the entire thing, and the kid waves the wand and, you know, and says the word and makes things happen inside this little room. And that's fantastic. So once you're done with that, you can then buy a wand, and you can get, and there's like most of the wands from most of the major characters are available, and you can buy an inactive version and an active version. And the active version allows you to do things within the Hogsmeade section of the park.
No.
Yeah. Like you can make it rain. You can, and you do it by waving the wand in certain patterns.
That is so cool.
It is so cool, and the kids just loved it. And I saw a few adults loving it, and it took everything, all my self-control to not be one of them. And of course, you know, you could buy like, you know, wizarding robes and things like that. And so there are all these kids running around in full Harry Potter garb with their wands and, you know, going over to like, you could make one of the, there was like a cuckoo clock, but it's not a cuckoo clock, but it was, you know, like you wave the wand and everything starts moving.
Okay.
Right. And again, you had to wave it in a certain pattern. There's instructions like on the ground for which pattern you're supposed to wave it in. And I mean, you know, and like it's cool. It's fun. It's super fun. And the idea of being able to take that up another step and being able to see things like you could see, do you remember how, the house that Harry, the Order of the Phoenix was based in. Oh my God. I'm drawing a complete blank and I can't believe this.
This is awesome. Everyone circle the day on the calendar. Brian forgot part of his Harry Potter lore.
Sirius Black's house, the Black House, right? And it was like squeezed, like, you know, when you said the right spell, the other houses would be squeezed out of the way and you could see them. Mm-hmm. Well, this is something that could be done through augmented reality.
Augmentia Realis. I waved my magic wand when I did that.
That's good. That's fantastic. And I think that would be exciting, being able to see animals, being able to. Now, my understanding is that it's part game, part revealed world, and it's the revealed world aspect that to me will make this a lot more interesting than the Pokemon thing, because the Pokemon was so centered around, you know, collecting the Pokemon and then battling with them.
Right. So, yeah, it's going to be fun to see how they engage you with interactivity to keep you playing this game.
Yes. But see, that's just it, though. Just witnessing hidden things will in and of itself be delightful. Should be delightful if they do it well. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So it definitely to me, it offers a lot more possibilities.
Yeah. It's okay. So what I'm visualizing now is you'll be able to walk around with your iPhone and there will be special places around you and what, you know, in your neighborhood, around where you work or go to school. And those will be the special wizard places.
Right.
And so then you'll be able to see things like the buildings between the buildings or maybe there's a Dementor that you have to stop. Or
that would be like cool and frightening as can be.
Yeah.
That would be frightening as can be to be looking on your iPhone or your iPad and seeing a Dementor.
Yeah.
That's scary.
And having it come right at you.
Right.
Yeah. I think this sounds great. And this is the sort of stuff that for me makes Apple's augmented reality push with the AR kit just so awesome, because now that Apple is really committing to AR, this becomes something that everyone, meaning developers and companies that have products they want to promote, are getting on board with. And now it becomes this more mainstream thing. And
yeah,
and this is just so much fun.
Yeah. And that's another thing about this, you know, so Niantic has all the lessons they learned from Pokemon Go, as well as backing from Warner Brothers, which, you know, helps. Of course, they had plenty of backing from Nintendo. Mm-hmm. To be get for the Pokemon Go game. Right? Wasn't it Nintendo?
Yeah, Nintendo
making that right?
With Niantic.
Yeah. So, you know, they're going to have all the backing from Warner Brothers, but then now they have AR kit to build on. You know, they had to do all the stuff they did from Pokemon. They were having to do that all themselves.
Yeah, now it's just built into the system.
Yeah, well, a lot of it's built into the systems. So, and, you know, but then they've got, like I said, all the lessons that they've learned from Pokemon Go. And I can't wait for this to be super exciting. It's like the Harry Potter universe was built for this.
Yeah, I agree. It just has that feel. It's going to be pretty cool. Have we heard yet when this is going to be available?
No, but you can sign up to be quote unquote one of the first to know.
Okay.
So, and I would imagine, I mean, of course, you know, they're just wanting your information to be able to market to you. But I signed up anyway. I signed up before I wrote the article. Like, yep. That's okay.
Awesome.
I'm signing up. And, the fact that they're doing it now, to me, it seems like they'd want to roll this before Christmas, but
especially if they do accessories. You're like, what if they do the magic wand thing where it's like Bluetooth pairs up with your iPhone and the wand registers what you're doing? And
yeah, but they'd want to have that out, man. It's November. They'd want to have that out.
That's right. It's November.
Oh, they'd really want to have that out, but that would be fantastic, by the way, an accessory that coupled with the app/game that allowed you to cast spells like that wand I would buy.
That would be really cool.
I'd buy that wand in a heartbeat.
All right. So if this isn't in production already, Niantic, call me.
Yeah, please. What's our time?
Wow, we are 35 minutes into a show.
All right. Well, in that case, let's look at our third topic, which is I lament the fact that my iPhone arrives tomorrow. My iPhone 10 arrives tomorrow, so I still can't talk about this from the standpoint of having used one.
That's just harsh. I feel bad for you. I mean, like really, I do.
Thanks. The question, though, is now that you've had how long have you had? You've had yours for 10 days now, 12 days.
Yeah, I got it on a launch day.
And you put out your comprehensive review this morning.
Yes, I did. And the short version is, I think this is a really great phone.
Okay. And the medium version?
And the medium version is the more you use the screen, the more you take it for granted. And then at the same time, the more you look at it and think, how is it possible that they made a screen that looks so right that it looks fake? Seriously, it looks like... Okay, so you know in Next Generation, Star Trek Next Generation, all of the control panels on the Enterprise... Those are called OCUDAgrams.
Okay.
And that's because the people, it's a husband and wife team, last name OCUDA, and they design all these things. And so then they print them out on like Mylar sheets and put them on the consoles and then backlight them. So you have this incredible resolution with all this stuff on it. And that's what this reminds me of. Because it looks so good. It looks like someone did a super high resolution, full color print and then put it on the screen and backlit it. Yeah. And the notch, don't even worry about it. Seriously, the whole thing with people like flipping out, I can't believe Apple did the notch. Now we have the notch and we have the horns. You don't pay attention to the notch. It just kind of blends in with everything else.
That's how I assumed it would be. It'd be the kind of thing you notice for a little bit and then you don't notice anymore.
Yeah. And for a little bit, it's likely just a few minutes and then you're just so wrapped up in everything else you're doing. The notch is essentially invisible to you.
But you know how, we talked about this and I've argued that trucking will be the first industry to really be taken over by autonomous vehicles. Mm-hmm. This is like a complete non sequitur. And in particular, trucking between cities.
Right. Yep. That makes sense.
Tesla today is showing off a truck. You know, 18-wheeler style truck. I don't know if it has 18 wheels, but it's a large cargo truck.
That's really cool. And at the same time, I'm thinking... What about all these people still waiting their Model 3s? Maybe they should have cranked out some more of those first.
Well, they could theoretically do two things at once.
Yes, I'm just kind of being obstinate but about it. But still, yeah, it's totally cool. And it supports your hypothesis that trucking would be the market that gets true autonomous vehicles first.
Yeah. Yeah, completely disrupted by autonomous vehicles. But anyway, that's happening right now. They launched this on Instagram, as far as I know. And I'm not sure what else is out there, but I know I saw it on Instagram. All right, so tell me about the camera, because we've been seeing a lot of stuff about the camera for the iPhone 10.
Okay, so the short version is you are going to love this camera. And I know how you are about photography. I love your photography.
It really is all about me. That's so great.
See, I know how this works. You're going to love the camera. Like, seriously. This camera, here's how I tested it. Instead of setting up all these artificial conditions to see what I was going to get from the shots, I use the camera the way I use the camera. A real person out in the real world just taking shots. And so I went out and did a bunch of shots with the iPhone 7 and the iPhone 10, compared them, and the iPhone 10 shots were like across the board better, just for everything I was doing. And I did shots that I knew would be difficult for my iPhone 7 to handle. Like, if you look in the review, there's one shot where I'm standing at the, it's actually the east end of Pearl Street Mall. So you're looking down Pearl Street, and I take a photograph, and the clouds had broken up. And so you have a lot of big white clouds in the sky and a lot of blue, and it's bright. And so I took a shot without tapping anywhere on the screen to do when you're setting your focus point and also the contrast for the shot. I would just hold up the phone and take a shot. So on the iPhone 7, what I'd have to do is like maybe tap on the sky and then slide my finger down so I could bring down that exposure. That's what it is. You tap for the exposure, bring down the exposure and then take the shot. And then maybe the buildings would be a little darker than they ought to be, but the sky would be right and it would be close enough that people would be like, wow, that's a really great shot. With the iPhone 10, it was just, I held it up, I did the shot, and all the colors are right.
That's great.
Yeah. And I'm used to seeing skies blown out a lot because, you know, I'm in Colorado. It's the atmosphere is thinner. The sky seems brighter and it's hard to get those shots, but the iPhone 10 did it just fine. Went to a concert and it was a smaller venue concert. And so I'm sitting in the middle of the room. It's like a 350 seat venue. So I'm in the middle of the room. It's totally dark where the audience is, and then you have all the stage lights. Well, that's a recipe for disaster for a lot of shots with a lot of cameras. The iPhone 7, it can handle it, but you tend to get brighter areas on clothes and skin and instruments that blow out, and I really wasn't having that at all with the iPhone 10. And I included a shot from that in the review as well, so that you can see just how well it handled the low light conditions with that extra brightness that you get where it's in the wrong place for the camera, and you have motion, and it handled all of that. I don't have a blurry shot, which I expected. I don't have colors blown out, and it looks really nice.
And this is all with the back camera you're talking.
This is all the back camera. And then other shots that I did where I did close-ups, like there's a flower in the review, and that's the flower is probably about the size of a half dollar, and so it's not a big flower, but it's not super tiny either, and so I just got up close to it, and then snapped the shot. Didn't tap anywhere to force the focus. Just get the camera near there and go. And the photo that I got, you would think that I had intentionally done a bokeh effect, but just the depth of field that I got from the shot, the camera doing its own thing, it turned out really well. And it got the reds right too. That's a hard thing I found for cameras to get the reds right. And so that's all the back camera. And then when you get to the front camera, that it's now 7 megapixel, and on the iPhone 10 it supports portrait mode. So previously you had to have a plus model iPhone to get portrait mode, so that would have been the iPhone 7 plus and then also the 8 plus, but it was just on the rear facing camera. Front-facing as well on the iPhone 10, and I included a shot from the only model I could find that was willing to participate in the test that day.
Some very very attractive woman, I'm assuming.
Yes, it's some very attractive woman. No, it's me.
Darn! It happens to be an excellent photograph, though.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you look spiffy and dapper as can be, and it's a great photograph, and the blurred out background is definitely amazing.
So, the way it blurred out the background is great. The way it adapted to skin tones was really interesting, because it just looks really good, the image is sharp enough. And I did this the way you see everyone do a selfie. I held the camera out at arm's length and hit the button, and that was it. And that's the photo I got.
Right.
But it was so good. I mean, look close at that. The wind had been blowing a little earlier, and a dust cloud had come across where I was. Look at the lenses in the photograph. You can see the dust specks on the glasses.
Yeah.
Yeah, just the iPhone X camera has spoiled me. And I have felt like, well, once we got to like the iPhone 6, really, from that point forward, every camera I've been like, wow, I can't believe how much better this camera is. And right. Now we get to the iPhone 10, and I'm not sure how Apple can wow me with the next camera because of how good this one is.
You know, I think we've already gotten reports that Apple is working on putting the TrueDepth camera on the back.
Well, that's you're only partly right. And I'm being pedantic here because it actually matters for the technology. So the TrueDepth camera on the front, that's the one that uses the grid of 30,000 infrared dots to do the 3D mapping.
Mm-hmm. What they're Face ID.
For Face ID and for Animoji, stuff like that. What they're going to do on the back is use a laser. So instead of 3D mapping, it will be doing highly accurate depth and distance.
Right, which will probably amp things up another notch. And that's going to be in 2019, I believe, right?
That's what we're hearing. So, yeah. Yes, it will definitely amp things up. Primarily for augmented reality, because your phone will be able to do that super precise distance measurement. So you don't have issues like I have right now with the IKEA app. And I'm not bagging on IKEA because what they're doing is really cool with their app. But if I try and place a chair in my living room to see how it's going to look with their AR thing, the chair is going to be floating above the floor.
Right.
Like almost every single time. And these are the sort of things you won't have when the laser system is in the camera, because now you have that incredible accuracy for depth. And because your phone has a sense of depth, other things that break the illusion of the object actually being there don't become an issue anymore. Like, I'm certain by this point we've all seen videos of someone demoing their proof of concept AR kit app, and the dog runs along, and their pet dog, and it runs in front of the object, but based on its size and perspective, you can tell the dog's actually behind the object. But
yeah.
But you end up seeing it break in front because the camera can't get the depth right for that. The lasers will fix that.
So augmented reality aside, though, I think there's all kinds of interesting things that Apple could do with focus if it was using this sort of thing. So, I mean, like, I it's conceivable. I don't know that Apple will, but it's conceivable that having this technology on the back camera will allow for better ordinary photographs too.
You are absolutely right. Yep. So you'll have much more precise control over depth of field for shots. And I've heard talk about this helping Apple with a thing that we heard rumored at one point. I think it was like for the iPhone 6S Plus, which was that variable focus, where you take a shot and then you can change that depth in the afterwards.
In post, yeah.
In post. If you have lasers, you're going to have a lot more accurate depth data anyhow. So
that's true.
Maybe that's when Apple throws in the lenses and the chips that let them gather all that data so you can do the variable focus adjustments after the fact.
Right, which would also be exciting and would also be the kind of thing that would that would impress you as much as the differences in the iPhone 10 camera did.
Yes. And but see, these are the kinds of things Apple's going to have to do to impress me with or blow my socks off with the next one, because the bar that they have set with the cameras in the iPhone 10, it's a very high bar.
Well, and to be fair, it won't be the next one, right? It'll be the one after. Because it's 2019 models that were the rumor mill is saying we'll have this stuff.
Yeah, right. So yeah, so the 2018 iPhone, I'm expecting that the cameras will remain mostly unchanged from the iPhone 10.
Well, so the other devices will get the cameras at the very least. iPhone 8s or 9, depending on what it's called, will get the same camera system that is in the 10. Get Face ID, possibly get some of the improvements in the back camera too.
What do you think about the idea that next year's iPhone lineup will change so that the iPhone 10 style, that's just the standard phone? Like, you know, like today we have the iPhone 8, and then they make a larger version of this, which becomes a plus phone again.
No, too expensive. Apple needs to have a phone that starts at that $650 range, not the $1,000 range.
Well, they admittedly do that.
Admittedly, but iPhone
this
10.1 or whatever, you know, iPhone 10.2. I have no idea what they're going to call it.
I think they're just going to call it iPhone.
Could be, you know, manufacturing costs could be brought down in such a way that they can offer the kinds of things that we're seeing now in a less expensive form factor. But I think that Apple is looking at this two-tiered system again. You've got the high-end phone that's really expensive, and you've got the entry-level phone for all the pores, and I'm kidding. And that's we're going to see that for a little while.
That's very possible. Yep. It's the way I could see the idea that I just tossed out there for fun working effectively for Apple would be if the cost of manufacturing drops significantly.
And yeah, but it's not. OLED screens could become cheaper, but there will be another high-end screen for Apple to use. Mm-hmm. So I don't. You're not going to see that significant a reduction in what it costs to make the iPhone 10 to be able to make you know the iPhone 9 the iPhone 10. I think we're going to see this two-tiered system.
Well, and actually I think you are right on that. I was tossing out the other thing just cuz I thought it was a fun idea and I wanted to see how you'd react. But yeah, I'm with you. I think that we have a multi-tier system for iPhones for now. And I think the Pro Series phones will all have the dual cameras. And I'm calling it the Pro Series just for ease of distinguishing things. And then the Standard Series, which would be like what the 8 is today, then those will be the single lens systems and then they'll have an old model that becomes the super discount version phone. I kind of hope that they upgrade the SE, the iPhone SE, and keep something like that in the system, but just with more modern components.
Yeah, I wanted to see that updated this year, and it wasn't. Not really. So
no, yeah. It wasn't.
There was the red model.
Yeah, that's not the same.
No, it's not the same.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited. You get your phone tomorrow.
I do. Yep. I'll be able to talk about it the week after, you know, now that it's no longer new.
Yeah, but our listeners, I'm sure, are going to be interested in hearing your take on it after listening to me talk about this phone for, what, a couple weeks now?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. And you have a case already?
I do have several cases that have been sent to me.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Cool. I'm looking forward to hearing what you like best.
And I've got a wireless charger to play around with that. And yeah.
Yep. I have a little wireless charger sitting on my desk right now, and I'm looking forward to testing some others because my guess is by the time we're done with testing, we'll be able to tell people, hey, this is one you can buy if you want to make sure you get the fast charging. This one works, but it doesn't fast charge.
Right.
And that's going to be something that's important to a lot of people.
Right. We won't really be able to test that until Apple actually turns that software switch on.
Right. Which I have heard maybe in the final public shipping version of iOS 11.2. So we'll get it sooner than we thought.
Yeah, we'll see.
I know. We'll see. Yeah.
All right. Well, there you have it. Thanks for telling us about the camera. It's good stuff.
Sure. I love this camera. It is good stuff.
So head over to facebook.com/groups/contextmachine.
Yeah, that's where all the cool kids are hanging out.
And we have already had someone join us.
Oh, that's great.
As we were recording, John Vest, a longtime listener.
That's awesome. Thanks, John.
Joined. Yep.
Okay. Now that John is there, my statement about this is where the cool kids are hanging out is accurate because previously it was just us.
Right. And we're top men, not cool kids.
That's right. So come hang out with the cool kids and us.
Yes. And us. Yes.
Oh, man.
I like it.
And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And thanks for listening.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CacheFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. And that's all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer. Ricky plays good bass.
Yeah, he does.